Tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. The show will begin shortly.
It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Colzien takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmel.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. We'll be monitoring your tweets throughout the program right here on Giants.com. And as a little bit of a look back and look ahead, because obviously whatever we answer to this question, it will impact moving ahead what the deal is with the New York Giants in 2014. And that's what's the biggest story of this Giants offseason. Let me tell you, it's been a busy one. You can go as far back as, you know, January when the Giants decided to, you know, part ways with Kevin Gilbride. He ended up retiring. And they bring in Ben McAdoo to run this system. You have the injury to John Beeson. You have the release of Will Hill. You have all the signings on the offensive line from Jeff Schwartz to J.D. Walton. Chris Snee getting back healthy. That's a big story. Losing Justin Tuck, a huge story. Not extending Eli, not extending Ontrell Roll. Those are stories. Bringing in John McClain. How important is that now, considering you have the injury to John Beeson? Signing Rashad Jennings. Drafting Odell Beckham Jr. with your first-round pick. The draft in general, Andre Williams. Go to the defensive side of the ball. Maybe it's how you've helped your defensive backfield. Is it the combination of Dominique Rodgers-Camardi and Walter Thurman Jr. in that secondary? Is it letting go of Linval Joseph and handing the keys to Jonathan Hankins? Is it having Robert Ayers come in and replace Justin Tuck? Is it the fact that Jason Pierre-Paul is healthy, has dropped 15 pounds, and looks as good as I've ever seen him as a member of the Giants? Is it the fact that they still haven't brought in a veteran tight end that you know is going to be a good NFL player, that they're rolling the dice with that position? Is that your story? Is it the Eli ankle surgery, the fact that he's ahead of schedule, has come back, and has practiced? Maybe that's your top story. I'm thinking about cheating here and choosing one on each side of the ball, but I'm not going to do that. To me, the number one story of this Giants offseason, it will continue to be the number one story of this Giants offseason, quite simply, is the improvements on the offensive line. If there was one thing the Giants need to do after last season was get better on the O-line, they've done that. They brought in Jeff Schwartz. They brought in J.D. Walton. They drafted Weston Richburg. Chris Snee looks pretty good, though missing those two, the entire minicamp, with that injured elbow is a little bit of a concern. And now moving ahead, you still have a question about Will Beattie at left tackle. What is he going to be able to give you there? It's a fair question. So the offensive line continues to dominate. The second biggest story to me is the improvement in the secondary. Even though you lost Will Hill, the Dominique Rodgers-Camardi and Walter Thurman additions are huge. And I really think it's going to free up Perry Fuel to do a lot of fun stuff on that side of the ball. And this Giant defense, to me, has the potential to be the best Giants defense the Giants have had since I've been here, since 07. Could be the best defense this team has had. And that's including the lack of pass rush. I get that. The secondary could be that good if these guys stay healthy and play that well. That's how good the secondary could be. It's scary. It's scary how good they could be. And if I had to pick a third biggest story, I would say it's the skill positions on offense. Does Eli have the targets and wide receiver to succeed? Can Reuben Randall step it up in his third year? Can the tight ends give you anything? How does Beckham do in year number one as a rookie? To me, those are your three biggest offseason stories for the New York Football Giants. O-line, defensive secondary, and then weapons on offense. 201-939-4513. Let's hear from you. What do you think? What do you want to talk about? We could talk about that or anything else, New York Football Giants, National Football League. We will be taking your calls for the next hour. We'll wrap it at 10:30 today. Two more shows before I'm gone for about 3 weeks. And then I'll be back, and training camp will just be a week away. The players report on July 21st. So let's go to the phones at 201-939-4513 and start with Max in New York City. Max, what's going on, pal? Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Nothing much. How are you?
Good. I had two main questions I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Okay. First one was the likelihood of signing a new tight end as opposed to staying in-house. And the second was, what's the deal with Bromley, the third-round pick exactly? What do they, you know, plan to do with him? Is he just going to kind of sit out the first year? Do they have a bigger role than we think?
Well, I mean, I don't think the plan is for him to sit out the first year, but in the end, if everybody else stays healthy, could it be a little bit of a redshirt year for him? That's possible, only because there's a lot of talent ahead of him. I mean, the defensive tackle right now, Max, is probably one of the deepest positions on this Giants roster. You got Colin Jenkins,
right,
who's an excellent starter, borderline Pro Bowler. They think Jonathan Hankins can be a Pro Bowler at nose tackle in the middle of that 4-3 defense. And then, you know, you got guys like Mike Patterson, who's a great rotational guy. Marcus Coon's an up-and-coming young player. And then you have Bromley. To me, Bromley is going to be competing with Coon. Those two guys will be battling for that fourth shirt at defensive tackle on game day, and whichever one plays better will win that spot. If it's Coon, great. If it's Bromley, that's great. But Bromley have an opportunity, but it's going to be hard for him to make a big impact considering the other talent on the roster.
Okay.
And then, Max, by the way, on your tight end question, how likely is it they bring in a tight end and don't go with the guys in-house? I would say, I mean, I think the only guy that's out there that the Giants would consider bringing in and I think would be a significant upgrade over what they have would probably be JerMichael Finley. He hasn't signed yet, obviously. He's apparently been cleared by some doctors, but not all. I know he's visited teams. If I were the Giants, I would seriously consider bringing in JerMichael Finley. And if the Giants brought in JerMichael Finley and he's healthy, I think it would bring this offense up a notch, quite honestly, and I would be pretty confident in the fact they would win a minimum of 8 or 9 games. And I think the chance of them being a poor team this year probably diminishes significantly, because I think tight end's a big weakness, and JerMichael Finley can help them their whole lot. Go ahead, Max. I'm sorry.
I think you have to at least look at them. I mean, I don't know the risk factor. I know that New England, Seattle are giving them a look. I don't think you're going to spend that much on him.
Right.
You know, you have to believe he fits well with McAdoo's offense, especially McAdoo being a tight end coach. That's what his, you know, roots, if you will. So I really feel like you have to at least look at him. I'm not saying you have to sign him, because that's obviously, you know, not all in their hands. But, you know, you have to at least look at him. Just, you know, especially over Adam Robinson, I guess, would probably be their first tight end. It'd be a major upgrade, a guy that could, you know, help out, give potentially a young tight end that they have another year to produce. I think it'd be a major, major upgrade.
Hey, I agree. Hey, look, Max, I agree 100%. I'm not comfortable with the tight ends on the roster. I think they'll be able to make do if they stick with them, but it's certainly not going to be a strength. It's something they'll have to overcome. And I think JerMichael Finley, and again, he's not a perfect player by any means. You know, we talked about at the beginning of the offseason, I'm still not a huge fan. He has too many drops. He can be a little mouthy. Now you have the injury concern. There are things I don't like about him. But like you said, you're not going to have to pay him a lot at this point. You're paying him probably slightly above the veterans minimum or whatever that's going to be. It's a low-risk, high-reward type of scenario. And to me, it makes perfect sense for the Giants to go down that road. We'll see if they do it.
All right. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for the call, Max. Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. Andrew is in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, you're up next. What's up?
Hey, what's up, John? Have a good trip. I'll ask my wife how to say no raw food. Sometimes they have like pork, and she told me that her uncle, it's a really awesome salad. It has like minced pork in it, and that her uncle had it raw, the pork. But she said with foreigners, and that's good because you look like a foreigner, so they'll automatically give you cooked food.
Oh, that's good. I would definitely prefer cooked. By the way, I had my first honeymoon snafu this morning. I wake up this morning, look at my phone, and one of my flights between Thailand and Cambodia to go see Angkor Wat got canceled and moved up like 6 hours. So it is kink number one that we're going to have to overcome. But I'm psyched. I'm looking forward to it. We'll be leaving for Thailand in 8 days next Tuesday, and I can't wait. It should be great.
And also a cool thing about the flight, despite the length of it, it was like a 2.5 hours from Thailand to Hong Kong, then 17 hours.
Yeah.
But I got used I'm getting used to it, and we had extra seats in the back, but it actually flies over the North Pole. And
really?
It doesn't go like in a straight line, and the pilot, he's like, we'll be leaving or flying over China through the Arctic, the North Pole, then north. So it goes from the North Pole to Newark, and they put the shades down, but it was like bright light. You know, it was cool. I tried to stay awake for the North Pole.
Yeah, you know what?
I made it,
yeah.
Like,
you know what, Andrew? It's funny. I'm actually taking a different flight path. I'm not going through Hong Kong. I'm flying through Abu Dhabi, so I probably won't be doing that flight path. But either way, that is that is pretty cool.
Because we went through South Korea the first time, and it was the same. It arcs over the
right.
You know, the top of the earth. And I thought, well, we've been on a plane 10 hours. We should be somewhat close. And I look out the window, and it's all ice. So it's like spectacular. I tried to stay up to take video, but I made it to like, you know, near the Arctic a little bit. But, you'll have a great trip. And what I heard on Giants.com that stood out, which goes along with your intro to the show, Coughlin said that Eli is a great example because he has to learn this new offense. So the new guys, all the rookies and all the free agents, they see Eli, who's this experienced veteran, 10 years in the league, smart, got these high Wonderlic scores, and they see him grinding away and studying and studying. So
good point.
That it's like, you know, it motivates everyone to follow his example. So I think with McAdoo, like you said in the beginning of the show, I think that's the biggest story, the new offense. And I think, you know, the defensive backs are looking awesome. But I think everyone is excited and motivated and working hard, and there's really, like, you have to work hard because you have to learn a new offense, and they're probably bringing another tight end, but I'm really psyched about that, and if you wanted to expand on that quote, but if I don't talk to you, have a great honeymoon, a great wedding, and I'll talk to you when you get back.
Sounds good, Andrew. Thanks, pal.
Welcome.
Have a good one, man. You know what? It's hard for me to argue against that. I know I left it off my top three, and maybe I was foolish for doing that. I honestly didn't put much thought into it. I kind of just did it off the top of my head. But, I mean, this new offense is a big deal. You know, we know what kind of quarterback Eli Manning can be at his best in Kevin Gilbride's system. We have no idea what Eli Manning is going to be, either at his worst or at his best, playing in a Ben McAdoo system. And they're very different. I mean, I know Ben McAdoo said a lot when he spoke to the media last Thursday that it's a mix of the two systems. Look, I guess it is. They're probably putting in a lot of elements from, you know, Kevin Gilbride's and Tom Coughlin's offense, and I'm not going to say that he's lying or he's wrong. They know a lot better than I do. We've only seen part of this offensive package in practice, but to me, it looks very West Coast. A lot of passes to the running backs, a lot of short passes, a lot of slants, a lot of crosses, a lot of deep in cuts, or shallow in cuts, rather. I mean, it looks like that. I mean, it looks like a West Coast. It looks like I'm watching the Packers in practice. All those little stops and hitches and things of that nature. And look, we don't know how Eli's going to react to it. Heck, we don't know how Victor Cruz is going to react to it. And those are two of the Giants' biggest stars. Is Ruben Randle going to get better in this system? I don't know. The Giants hope so. We'll see. So those are all things you have to consider moving forward here. 201-939-4513. But the thing about it is going to be fun to watch. And, you know, get the training camp. There actually is a level of excitement to see this offense expand as you move along. Look, we knew what we were getting with the old offense. We saw it a million times, you know, in practice, in games, et cetera. But this is something truly new over here. 201-939-4513. Mike is in Tennessee. Michael, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Micah. How are you?
Pretty good. Have you heard of Around the League on NFL? Like NFL Network?
Yeah, what about it?
So they had winners and losers of OTAs and mini camps. Well, we were one of the winners
because
of our, huh?
Nah, I said of course they did, because NFL Network has nothing else to talk about, so they have to do winners and losers of OTAs and minicamp.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's kind of crazy. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So, yeah, they had us as winners, and they also had Reuben Randall as making the leap for the year. I don't even know if this means anything, but, yeah. So what do you think about that?
I mean, Reuben Randall did some. I mean, he didn't do anything that I would consider extraordinary or spectacular in OTAs and minicamp. I mean, he was fine. He caught some passes. He seems to be learning the offense well. If you know what people are saying is in fact true, which you know who knows. And his rookie year at this time, they were saying he was catching on quickly, and then all of a sudden they're killing him in the media week one of the regular season. So obviously it's very early. I think Reuben Randall can be fine. I mean, do I think Reuben Randall's ever going to be a Pro Bowl wide receiver? Honestly, I haven't seen that. I don't know if he has that in him, to be quite honest with you. That's just my opinion. But I think he can be a quality, you know, 70-catch-a-year type of receiver, you know, for like 900 to 1,000 yards and be a very solid number two. And I think he could do that in the system. I think he has the size. I think he's matured a little bit. And, look, I mean, I think Reuben Randall's going to be fine. But to say he's – I mean, could he be the Giants' breakout candidate this year? Sure he could. But I wouldn't base that on anything I've seen in OTAs and minicamp. I would just base that off the fact – that, you know, he improved in his second year as a wide receiver. He's going into a new system that's easier to work in. And that would be the product of my, you know, conclusion, not the fact that he looked good in OTAs and minicamp. That to me doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah. also, if the Giants had to pick a backup quarterback today, who do you think they would choose?
That's a great question. They had, honestly, I think they choose Ryan Nassib only because he's gotten so many more snaps than Curtis Painter has in the system. I think he'd be more ready because, you know, Painter had to miss a lot of time with that knee injury. So Nassib, I think, is probably more ready to step in and do the job right now because he's taking more snaps in practice. But I think those snaps, will equalize out a bit when we get to training camp. And we'll see. It'll be an open competition to see who wins it. I mean, Ryan Nassib has done nothing, you know, from what I've seen to, you know, stand out and be spectacular in OTAs and minicamp. I mean, he's been fine. But I think we got to see how he does in games. I mean, we got to see what he does with the twos. Last year, when Nassib played in the preseason, Mike, and this was the issue, he played with the threes. And the Giants' third-string offensive linemen, quite frankly, stunk. They were terrible.
Yeah.
They couldn't protect anybody. So he's in there in those preseason games running for his life. You couldn't even really tell how good he was because they couldn't give him three seconds to even throw a pass. So this year I think you'll see him on the field with the twos. And I think the Giants' second-string offensive line is pretty good. I mean, you're going to have Charlie Brown on that offensive line. You're going to have John Jerry, Weston Richburg. I mean, these are guys that have started in the league. So he should be able to get some good protection from that second-string offensive line. And in these preseason games, you know, it's going to be huge. I mean, Ryan Nassib's going to have to show you something to prove he can be the backup quarterback. But right now, I think he probably has the job.
All right. Well, thanks, man. I just want to say congratulations to you and have fun in Thailand, right? Is that where you're going?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, have fun, man. I hope you have a great time, and good luck.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot for calling in. We appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Stas all the way out on the West Coast in Washington. What's going on, Stas?
Hey, what's up, John?
Long time no speak, man. How you doing?
I know. I've been kind of laying low, but I'm still listening to the show every day.
Excellent.
Hey, so listen, this is something that I wanted to call and talk about just because a lot of people seem worried about Eli Manning and what he has to do, and is he going to be able to do the West Coast offense and stuff like that. And I was just having this conversation with my brothers, and obviously we're all huge Giants fans, and I reminded them. I was like, hey, I don't know if anybody remembers, but when Eli Manning was coming out of college, every single scouting report said that he was best suited for the West Coast offense.
You know what? I did not remember that, Stas.
Every single scouting report, they said because of his ability to read defenses and his accuracy in short and mid-range passes would make him ideal for West Coast offense. If you really look at Eli Manning, and right, so I believe Eli Manning gave us the best he could give us in the system that he was in 2011. Because Kevin Gilbride's system, as much as I love Kevin Gilbride, it had so many moving parts. Everything was a deep drop back. That system is designed more for a quarterback who can avoid a rush for a long time to allow routes to develop. It's not meant for a quarterback like Eli Manning, who's more cerebral. I honestly feel, and no one said this, I want you to write it down. Now, I'm the first person to say this. we're going to see the best of Eli Manning these next couple of seasons in this system. We haven't seen how good he can be. I've always felt that he's been hindered by his system because it allows a big risk of interception. It's high risk, high reward. In college, his average passing attempt was 8.5 yards. In the NFL, it's 18.
You mean
a huge 18?
Difference. Where are you getting that 18 number from?
I took last year and 2013 and 2012 season, and I took his passing attempt averages and then rounded them down to around the sit and half, so average in the last 2 years. 18 yards is what his average passing attempt. Most of the routes develop after the 10-yard mark in Kevin Gerbard's system. There's no short. Everything, even his hops are like 9 yards deep.
Well, I can just tell you, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Yards per attempt, in 2011, Eli's yards per attempt was 8.4. In 2012, it was 7.4. In his yards,
I Wikipedia'd his stats.
Well, I'm looking up his yards.
I Wikipedia'd his stats.
Well, I'm looking at Pro Football Reference right now, and his yards per attempt have never been over 8.5 in the NFL.
Oh, then Wikipedia has some bad information.
Yeah, they do.
Regardless, look at Ole Miss highlights.
I will.
Go back when you get a chance. Look at Ole Miss highlights.
I will.
And you see all his passing, all his attempts. They're short bootleg runs. Boom, slants to the sides. They're quick release. He's not taking on a five-step drops in Ole Miss, and he was amazing in Ole Miss. Like, he was truly amazing to watch play in Ole Miss. I think we're going to see the best out of him going into a West Coast offense.
Hey, look, we'll see. I mean, look, Stas, I think it's up for debate. You made a good point. I did not remember that about his scouting report coming out of college. I really didn't. I'm happy you brought it up. But we'll see. I mean, right now the offense is coming along slowly. Tom Coughlin said it. Ben McAdoo said it. Eli said it. They're making progress. But let's see how quickly it comes together in training camp. Let's see what it looks like in the preseason. And then really, though, we're not going to know anything until they start opening night, Monday Night Football, against the Detroit Lions. And until we get to that game, everything's going to be juxtaposition and, you know, basically prognostication and guessing. We don't know until we see it.
And I don't think it's going to get trust me, I'm not saying his first game he's going to light it up. I'm saying it's going to take a couple of weeks into the season
right
before they really start moving. But I feel like once everything starts coming, I feel like he's going to light it up. He's going to light it up.
Sounds good, Stas. You got anything else for me?
That's all I got, man. Have a great trip in Thailand.
Thanks, Stas. I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon. 201-939-4513. Drew in Virginia is next. What's going on, Drew?
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
Good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Exciting weekend this weekend, man. Talking about football, man. Ronaldo broke the American's heart.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is, I actually watched that game, Drew. And as everybody knows that listens to me on the show, I'm not a big soccer guy, but my fiance played soccer in high school, so she kind of gave me a tutorial as we were watching that game yesterday, and I actually learned a little bit. And number one, Ronaldo stunk in that game until he made that final great pass for that goal, number one.
Yeah, he did.
Number two, first, it was a bad turnover by Bradley, I know that. But where the heck were the American defenders? I mean, that to me, to make an NFL comparison, that should be prevent defense. You should have three defenders back in front of your goal at all times. You're not trying to score. How the heck do you let two guys get behind your defense like that with less than 20 seconds to play? And where are your defenders? I mean, that is like defense 101. I just don't understand how you let that happen.
Dude, let me tell you something, man. I don't I know even less about the game of soccer than you.
Oh,
so,
honestly, Drew, I don't think that's possible, dude.
Well, you know, then we'll be equal. But I will say this. Great players show up at you know, inopportune times, I guess, for the opposition. Because, you know, this kid, Ronaldo, was stymied. And then all of a sudden he comes up with this incredible pass, so... You know, it was just incredible. But at any rate, that's not why I wanted to call, John.
Yeah.
You know, give me a minute, man. You know, I'm actually, give me a minute, man, because, you know, we have, you know, certain people, certain fans who, you know, they just want to, you know, I think they undervalue Eli. And so I heard a call yet Friday that, you know, was kind of like, wow, really, I can't believe I'm hearing this from one of our fans. So at any rate, you know, these are just some quick stats. I went to profootballreference.com.
Yeah, great site.
Okay. So I just kind of looked at some stats, and I'm not going to sit up here and pick just a whole group of stats. But, you know, I was looking at, you know, I was doing a comparison with between Eli and Romo, okay? And, you know, so I just kind of looked at some things like wins or losses, you know, during regular season. And I noticed that Romo's record is 65-43, okay, out of 108 games. But it's 65-43, and I computed that to 71.4%, where Eli's winning regular season winning stats is 85-66. So that gives him a percentage of 77%. So advantage Eli there.
Well, I mean, if you want to do the strict winning percentage, I did this math the other day. You're right. Eli
okay,
went.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. I have my little calculator in front of me here. I can do it real quick here. So I just sort of make sure we're all on the same page. And I don't want to.
That's fine.
Yeah, Eli went 85-66. So that's 85 wins in 151 games. That's a winning percentage of 56%. Okay.
Is it 56?
That's what I got.
Come up with 77.
That's okay. I got 56 for Eli and Romo. I think Romo number is about the same. To be honest with you, Romo's 63-45, so that's 63 wins out of 108 games. That gives him a winning percentage of 58. So their winning percentages in the regular season are about equal. Romo was like a 1.5% bigger. So regular season wise, their records are almost identical.
Right. Okay. So, you know, my point is if you're going to make these statements, make sure you know what you're talking about. But then career passing numbers, I was looking at it, and yes, this is where Tony really has a huge advantage, okay?
Right.
Because I think Tony Romo is 95.8%, where Eli's comes in at 81.2.
Quarterback rating you're talking about there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right, but okay. Now I'm looking at comebacks. Okay, Romo had 24th quarter comebacks, and I'm counting all of the games. I guess they have the playoff games in here too.
Okay,
I know they
That's
do
fine.
Because Eli's quarterback to Super Bowl drives are in here as well. So you know, but I'm just give the basic number. So Romo has 24th quarter comebacks. He has 23 game winning drives. Okay, of those 23 game-winning drives, he has 2 against the Giants, and he has 11 in the division. Eli has 25 fourth-quarter comebacks, 30 game-winning drives. Out of those, he has 5 against Dallas and 11 against in the division. And then, you know, when we look at it, we look at Pro Bowls. We have both been to 3 Pro Bowls, okay? Romo in 6, 7, and 9, Eli 8, 11, and 12. Okay, my point is okay. You know when you want to do these comparisons, and I don't. And first and foremost, okay, for me personally, I don't take anything away from Romo. I think Romo is a good quarterback. I really do. And where Romo impressed me even more was last year, actually against Denver. Okay. That kid did everything he could do to try to win the game, and he threw that one interception. But you know what? For me personally, I'm not a Dallas fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not mad at Romo, okay? Because, yeah, Romo threw that interception, but guess what he was trying to do? He was trying to make a play. He was trying to get a win. And, you know, sometimes those things happen, okay? So I don't have any hate against Romo. But for everybody to sit up here and say, oh, this quarterback is better than this one and that one and everything else, sometimes you need to look inside the numbers.
Of course. Look, I'll say this. Look, as you said, Romo's regular season numbers, he has a slightly better winning percentage. His quarterback rating is a lot better, much better completion percentage, things of that nature. So, fine, give Romo the edge on the numbers in the regular season. But Eli is much better in big spots. He's had much more success in the playoffs. And he's been much better in fourth quarters, though Tony Romo has one of the best fourth quarter, I think, quarterback ratings in NFL history. But Eli has had more big moments in fourth quarters and big games than Romo has, which is why I've said for the last week when we got into discussion that in the end, Eli's the better quarterback because in the bigger spots, he's done a better job, and that does count for something.
Right, exactly. And then lastly, what I want to add, say, is this, okay, you know, because I think that, you know, certain fans are judging Eli based on his exterior appearance. You know, like you know, Michael Strahan once said, you know, yeah, Eli might walk around with this dopey look, you know, this Mayberry look or everything else. But I go back to what Strahan and the boys once said before. Okay, Eli is tough.
Yeah, he
okay?
is. Sure.
He's mentally tough, and he's a competitive. And when I was looking at some of the interception numbers up there, I noticed that all of these a lot of the quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Famer, in the Hall of Fame, and that were very successful, also had high interception numbers.
Yep. Terry Bradshaw is one, for example.
Exactly. Okay. I think I saw Peyton up there and, you know, some of the other. And obviously Brett Favre and those guys like this. My point is this, okay. The one thing that Eli brings to this team that a lot of teams wish they had, okay, is heart, okay, and competitiveness and a will of steel. And that's Eli. Okay, win, lose, or draw, Eli's going to make a play. To me, I said this once before, and I'll say this again. Both Eli's strength and some might argue his curse is that he doesn't have a problem with trying to make a play and putting the ball in there. Now, yes, he's not the most accurate quarterback in the league. We understand that. He's not as pretty as Romo. We understand that, okay? But he gets the job done. He has the intangibles that a lot of people wish they had, a lot of players wish they had.
I will tell
you right now.
Yep.
Let me just make this last comment. I will say this right now, okay? And I'm pretty sure you know this, okay? If most of the coaches in the league had to take Tony Romo or Eli Manning in a 2-minute scenario in a critical situation, you know, let's not kid ourselves. I think we all know who they'll take.
No question.
And let me say that loudly and clearly. That is Eli Manning. Eli Manning is a lot tougher. So I don't want to hear this. Eli's not tough. He's not a leader, or he's this and that. Because personally, this fan doesn't know what he's talking about. Because if he was listening to the team and listening to the other players to a man, they will tell you he is the opposite.
All right, Drew. Thanks, man. Great points.
Peace.
You have a good one, my man. 201-939-4513. Andre in Brooklyn's been holding the longest. Andre, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, John? I wanted to make a comment about the new offense. I feel like Coughlin is an offensive coach, and he's always talked about, you know, striking through the air. And, you know, everybody's talking about the Ben McAdoo, West Coast, quick passing. I believe they're still going to take shots.
Well, you know what, Andre, I'll tell you this. I specifically asked that question both to Victor Cruz and Eli Manning in interviews that are going to air probably sometime in the middle of July. And I kind of, you know, asked both, is this going to be really a full West Coast short passes thing? And both guys went out of their way without me even, you know, asking them specifically about it. We're still taking our shots. We're a team that takes shots down the field. We want to challenge you vertically. We want to stretch the field. And both Victor and Eli made it very clear to me. And they were very adamant about it. Trust me, I could tell by the, you know, enthusiasm in their voices that this team will still take shots down the field. So I think that'll make Giant fans very happy.
Right. And to piggyback something Drew was saying, you know, everybody's going to – they're always going to question Eli. You're either a fan of Eli, you root for the Giants, or – you know, you don't like him. You don't like the way he looks. You don't like the way he plays. I love Eli Manning. I'll pick him over a lot of quarterbacks because he's able to win. And the game is built on winning. It's not about quarterback rating and all that if you lose. It's not about none of that. It's about wins and losses. It's about championships. So that's what I want to see. Hopefully Eli will have a great year statistically and some people could lay off of him and win the Super Bowl.
Well, Andre,
I care about the win.
Yeah, Andre, and the thing about it, too, it's New York. I mean, look, people here hated Patrick Ewing the year he left, and now he's a saint again because people realized how good he was and they missed him after he was gone. You know, Phil Sims was a target here for years. He went on to win, you know, won two Super Bowls, depending on how you classify it. I mean, Carmelo Anthony is a guy that came here as a savior, and people are starting to turn on him now. I mean, it's just the way New York treats their athletes. They love guys until they don't like them anymore, and then they want to get rid of them. So it's just a very tough town to be a star in and to succeed in at a high level for a long period of time.
Real quick, if you had to choose right now between Eli and Romo, and you were starting a team, who would you pick?
I think based on moving forward, the type of – you know what? Screw it. Either way, I think you have to take Eli. Eli's a little bit younger than Romo is. He's had fewer injury problems than Romo has, and he's had more success winning big games. I think Eli's the better quarterback. And, look, he is. He's better.
All right, John. I appreciate your opinion. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Andre. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for calling in, bud. 201-939-4513. Steve, I don't want to get caught on this Eli Romo thing the whole show. So I know you want to retort to Drew. Just make it quick, and then we can move on to a different topic. All right, Steve? Go ahead, buddy.
Yes, sir. How you doing,
John? I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
Listen, I'm good. Listen, I'm cool, man. I'm not going to even dwell on it. I just want to say, you know, people are kind of really just kind of hanging on to one or two things I said, but I want to make it clear, like I said, you know, I wouldn't trade Eli for Romo any day. And I just want to remind people it's a team sport. You know, I love Eli. I wouldn't trade him for anything. You know, I don't really feel like I have to defend, my opinion because it's just an opinion. It really doesn't matter because the bottom line is he's a guy and he's family to me. Wouldn't trade him for anything. I'm happy to everything he's brought. And I do think he's a great quarterback. I happen to be an SEC man, watched his whole college career. So I was excited to have him, you know, as a rookie, and I'm excited to have him now.
Now, see, bottom line is that you just don't like him because he didn't go to Florida. That's the bottom line, right?
Hey, listen, yeah, you know, but we took it out on Peyton real good.
Yes, you did. But, that is true.
that's all I wanted to know. But I want to see, I already brought up the fullback situation, but you know, could tell me about the health of David Wilson. When is his next doctor's appointment?
David Wilson will get checked out along with the rest of the team when they show up on July 21st to get physicals on the first day of training camp. David Wilson will get his imaging done, whether it's an MRI, a CAT scan. I think it's actually an X-ray, to be honest with you. Whatever imaging he needs to get done to get the pictures to get cleared, he will do that on July 21st when he reports to camp.
Yeah. But, you know, John, I did have one thing. I'm really not – it's not about breaking out Eli again, but the other caller said something to me. You know, a couple calls before Drew. You don't have to talk at me, Brian. We can talk. Hit me on Twitter. You can find me. I'm easy to find. But anyway, I always thought that Eli was better at throwing the long ball.
Oh, yes.
I didn't really see the accuracy I like to see on the short ball. So I really wasn't sure what that caller was saying. You know, because certainly I didn't see that. I just wanted to know what your opinion was of that.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I didn't remember what his college scouting report was. I got to be honest. I mean, I just don't remember what it said, if he was better on the West Coast or whatever. From what I've seen on the professional level, Steve, I agree with you. To me, Eli Manning's been a guy that's been very accurate throwing the ball deep, especially down the middle of the field. I think he's better in the middle of the field than he is outside the hash marks, but he's very good at throwing the ball down the field and hitting guys on those deep posts and deep down the seam type of plays. I agree 100%.
You know, I think, obviously there's been a lot of talk about throwing screen passes to these running backs, and I mean, you know, my first reaction is, oh, no, I smell interceptions, you know, just because of, you know, the recent history with not being able to throw them, so I'm just wondering, how much do you think the offensive line will play a big part of that? Because Eli's only trouble is really up the middle. He can handle everything else, you know, immaculately, but I'm always worried about pressure up the middle.
Steve, honestly, Steve, that's not just Eli. Every quarterback in this league, trust me, single quarterback in this league has trouble with pressure up the middle. You get pressure on the middle.
That's a tribute to him. He makes everything else look easy, you know, as long as it's not up the middle, so... But, yeah, I'm just wondering, how do you see our guards and our center playing? I mean, do you think they will really make a major difference with, you know, holding that pressure down the middle?
I do. I mean, I think Walton and Richburg are both upgrades over what the Giants had at center last year. And if you have to end up having to play Richburg at guard, you live with it. Chris Knee is getting – it looks healthy to me. We'll see if that elbow can hold up. I think that right now is a bigger concern than the hips are. Jeff Schwartz is clearly an upgrade over anybody they had playing guard last year. So I think the Giants, from guard to guard, including that center, are going to be much better this year than they have probably been the last 2 years, I'd say.
Yeah. Hey, John, do they have a set schedule as to when, you know, once we get to minicamp, do they have a set schedule as to when they start to break down the roster, or they just kind of break it down as they see it? You know, is it practice by practice, or, you know, are there, like, certain days where they're going to be making cuts?
The NFL has deadlines, Steve, where you have to cut guys and get your roster down to a specific number on a certain day. The evaluation will take place up until that time, and then usually, you know, a couple hours before that deadline, each team makes their cuts.
All right, last thing I got. Who do you think will be a surprise cut this year? I mean, I'm thinking Herzlick, but who do you think, you know, may kind of catch people off guard as far as not making the team that was here last year?
Would you consider Michael Cox a surprise cut?
Unfortunately not, but I think it'd be a mistake.
Alright. I would put him in that list. Another guy that could be a surprise cut. Oof, that's a good question. Who else could be a surprise cut? James,
yeah, give me somebody on defense.
I can give you James Brewer. I don't know if you want to count him. Defensively, I think Herzlick's a good one, to be quite honest with you. Boy, I mean, I could see a scenario where Hosley gets cut. I could see a scenario where Cooper Taylor gets cut. I'm not saying I think either one is going to happen, but I could see a scenario where it breaks down that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, as much as I've not been a Cooper fan that much, I really hate to see us cut him after all this time, after kind of keeping him around, basically, you know.
Now, Steve,
him along.
Yeah.
I want to see him play now.
No, I agree. And again, I think there's a very low percentage chance he gets cut. But let me put it this way. I don't think they're going to get rid of Nat Burhey. It's his first year. You know, he's a middle-round pick. I can't imagine they'll let go of him, you know, the same year they draft him. They're going to keep Quinton Demps. And then combined now with Stevie Brown and Anchor Roll, that's four safeties already. So, in my opinion, I think they're going to keep five, and that's why Taylor's going to be on the team. However, if they get into a situation where they have a lot of injuries elsewhere and a lot of guys go down at one position and they have to reinforce that position, they might not be able to keep five safeties, and that's when you run into an issue.
Is there any scenario at all where you see us either trading or cutting Nassib this year, any scenario? Is it possible we could try to trade him later on?
No, I don't think.
If he does
I don't think, well, if he does well, you want to keep him as your backup, no?
Yeah, I guess so. You know.
Honestly, I could see a scenario in which they cut Nassib. I think there's a very low percentage chance of that. But if he's an epic disaster and they have injuries elsewhere and they can't afford to keep three quarterbacks, I could see a scenario in which that happens, though I think it's extremely unlikely.
Okay, cool, man. Well, listen, John, thanks for taking my call, buddy. And, if I don't get the chance to talk to you again, man, congratulations. Have a good time. Be safe.
All right, Steve. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Good to hear from you, man. 201-939-4513. This guy sent over quite a nice little playlist. Charlie, I've done the cocktail hour, I've done dinner, and I'm about halfway through the reception. So your list has been very helpful. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. You'll have a great time doing that. I don't know who's going to be controlling your music, but, there's times when people are going to want to, hit the slow song. So, you just got to feel it out.
Charlie, that's what I did. Yeah. See, now what I'm doing here, I'm putting together a 2.5-hour music file that's going to play from the end of dinner to the end of the night. So I'm interspersing, say, every 20 to 30 minutes or so, maybe a little more than that. I'm putting in a slow dance every now and then so people have a chance to slow down, cool down, and kind of take a break before we amp it back up again.
Right. Now, that's good. Because you're gonna have some older folks there, and they're gonna want to just slow it down a bit. But that's great. I'm glad it helped. I was hoping that would at least help you a little bit.
Charlie, no question. What do you got in the Giants?
All right. First thing, I'm just gonna I listened to the show after on Friday, and I couldn't believe it. But anyway,
let's not beat the dead horse. Be quick.
I'm gonna be quick. I was just gonna say that Jerry Jones, if he had a choice of trading Romo for Eli straight up, he would do that in a heartbeat because he was even willing to take Johnny Manziel. He really wanted him, but he was afraid to take him because of the controversy. So that's all I want to say about that.
Okay.
And the other thing is Aaron Ross got picked up.
Oh, he did. I missed that. Who picked him up?
Yeah, Baltimore Ravens picked him up.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that.
Yeah, so I was glad to see that got himself on a team. If he stays healthy, he's gonna help him.
Hey, Joel,
sure
you know what? You know, you can say what you want about Aaron Ross. He's had injury issues and all that stuff, and you know he probably didn't live up to that first round pick billing with all those hamstring injuries. I think it really kind of hurt him long term. But he is a great guy, and you will not find a nicer guy. He's very friendly, and I wish him well.
Yeah, I know that's the persona he had, and that's why I wish him well too. And the only thing I got is just trying. You know, hopefully we'll add some players later on here. And I think we got to look for a left tackle. I mean, maybe Charlie Brown will be fine, but if somebody gets cut that's a veteran tackle, even if he's a little older, I hope the Giants bring somebody in just for safety reasons if Beedy has any problems.
Well, right now, Charlie, the good news is I think right now the team and Beedy both appear to be pretty optimistic that he's going to be able to practice at the start of training camp, which is certainly good news. We'll wait and see. Who knows how it plays out. But right now, the team seems to be optimistic about that.
And the other thing I had was Finley. Sir Michael Finley. I don't know. I wouldn't bring the guy in. Unless McAdoo really feels like he loves the guy, but I don't know. He had a real serious injury, and that's pretty dangerous to me, and whether he'd even be able to be his old self, because, I mean, I'd be flinching all over the place if I was going over the middle. And the thing you said about Eli not really being a really great passer on the sidelines, I remember that play in the Super Bowl. That was a pretty good pass.
No, all I said was that he's a better passer down the middle of the field deep than he is on the sideline deep. But that was one of the best passes you could ever throw in a spot like that, no question about it.
Right. And I remember Imani Toomer doing a lot of tiptoes on the sideline with passes from Eli.
No question.
But, hey, John, we got a SWAT team put together. In case anything happens in Thailand.
All right.
we got Len. He's going to do the negotiating. And Shakes and Jay Rock and Rhodey and Steve from Washington and I think it's Frank down in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, but Charlie, here's the thing. I need someone with the cash to pay for the kidnapping ransom is what I need.
Well, that's Len. Len's got okay. We'll figure that's Len. He'll be the negotiator, and he'll bring all the money with him.
Excellent. Thanks, Charlie.
Well, man, have a great time.
I appreciate it.
I'll talk to you when you get back.
Charlie, thanks for the help, man.
Hey, no problem.
Take it easy, my friend. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Mike down in Virginia. Mike, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Morning, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Making some French toast.
Nice. Oh, that sounds delicious.
I was just listening for a while, but I think I haven't heard of anything about was Andre Williams. He was the leading rusher in the NCAA last year.
Yeah.
So, what have you seen from him so far? I know it's OTAs, but let me know something.
Yeah, I mean, see, here's the thing. I mean, I'll also give you a couple things on Andre Williams. Number one, like you said, his OTAs, he can't tell a whole lot. A big part of Andre Williams' game is power, right? He's strong. He runs through people. There's no contact in OTA. So I really don't have a good taste of exactly how strong and powerful the kid is. He looks like a Mack truck, but I haven't seen him actually run anybody over yet. So wait and see on that. I'll say one thing about Andre Williams, and I'm not sure if I brought this up in the show before, which is my fault. He's actually done a pretty darn good job catching passes so far in OTAs and minicamp. They've run some screens for him. They've run some swing passes for him, a couple of circle routes to the middle of the field. And he's dropped maybe one, maybe two. But everything that's gone to him, it has been a pretty decent pass. He's caught it and has looked pretty comfortable doing it. So, to me, that was his one hit coming out, Mike, of college, that he couldn't catch the football. He was a bad receiver out of the backfield. He's been a lot better in that regard than I thought he was going to be. So I think that's a good sign.
I thought they overblew that. I think that they didn't use him as a receiver in college at all. I think he caught the balls they threw at him. But as far as he didn't have like a ton of – I saw him as a pro day. I saw a video of him, and he was catching passes there.
No, Mike, you know what? Mike, you're right. His pro day was a lot better. But when he ran that running back gauntlet at the combine and he tried to catch those passes at the combine – it was one of the worst catching displays I had ever seen. It was awful. But you're right. He obviously went home and he worked on it, which is what you want to see. And when he did his pro day, he looked a lot better. But at the combine, he was terrible. But at his pro day, he was good, and it looks like he's continued to make progress since then.
Fine. Well, can you give me a prediction on what you think the Giants' running game is going to be this week?
Well,
this year, I mean.
I think David Wilson's going to get cleared, and I think he's going to be healthy. So I'm going to go under that assumption for a second. So I think that you're going to see Rashad Jennings be a primary back, carry the ball anywhere from 15 to 18 times a game. I think David Wilson's going to be your change of pace guy. He's going to carry anywhere from 8 to 10 times a game. And then, based on the week and based on how the guys have played, you'll either give a shirt to Peyton Hillis or you'll give a shirt to Andre Williams. And if it's Peyton Hillis, he'll carry it a couple times. He'll catch probably two or three passes a game out of the backfield as a pass protector and as a receiver. Or if it's Andre Williams, he'll carry it four to five times a game. He'll be a short yardage back, and he'll score probably about 6 to 7 touchdowns over the course of the year. That's how I see them breaking it down.
Very nice. And I wanted to say one last thing, if I could.
Yeah, sure.
I had a conversation with my dad the other night. He's a old-time Giants fan way back in, you know, past days. But he was talking about how the how Gil Bright, he thought, might have held Eli back a little bit as far as not like a wide-out offense, not taking advantage of his skills necessarily. What do you think about that as far as him being held back a little bit?
Well, honestly, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I've seen Eli play some of the best football I've ever seen from any quarterback in Gil Bright's system. So, I mean, I've seen Eli at his best in that system. I've seen Eli at his worst in that system. So until I actually see him in games and in a different one, it's hard for me to really say, you know, one way or the other. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know. I think right now that's a guess. It could be right. It could be wrong. But I can't tell you which way it's going to go until I actually see him play some regular season games in a different system.
Right. I think statistically he suffered from it. I think in the long run, he won the Super Bowl, so it doesn't matter. But as far as, like, just us arguing about who's the best quarterback and all that, I think his regular season might have been more in tune with his postseasons if he had a more wide-out offense.
Well, you know, I'll say this. I think in Gilbride's system, Mike, and I think this is a fair thing to say, I think because of Gilbride's system, his completion percentage is probably a little bit lower than it's going to be under McAdoo, and I think his interceptions are probably a little bit up than what it's going to be under McAdoo. So I think those two numbers will probably improve, but I think his yards per attempt and his yards per completion will probably go down. Big plays might go down a little bit. So I think there's a give and take. I think he'll get better at certain things, and he won't be quite as good at others. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. All right, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike. Be good, man. 201-939-4513. Final call of the show, and then I have a Twitter question I want to get to. We've talked about this before. This is Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's going on, pal?
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing great, Marco. How are you, pal?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing great, too. I've been listening every day. Unfortunately, I can't call in as much as I'd like to.
That's okay. Thanks for listening.
No problem, man. It's a great show. Just a couple things that I wanted to hit on. I think Paul or Anita, maybe you mentioned over the last couple weeks, bringing up some tackles that are available, and Eric Winston's name has come up a couple times.
Yes, it has. That is a Paul DeTino crusade right there. He really wants them to bring in Eric Winston.
Okay, I will reach out to DeTino definitely while he's on in the next couple weeks. But what I've read about Winston before, whenever he's left the team, he's always rated highly as one of the best free agent tackles on the market. But he doesn't get picked up, and just because he was with the Chiefs, then he was let go right away. I guess what I've read is he has a role with the union, the players' union. So it kind of like under the radar, he's not always a number one guy that teams look to bring in because of that role. I guess it's maybe look at it like a conflicting role. I don't know much more about that, but I swear I've read that somewhere.
You know what? Honestly, that's a great question, Marco. I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
He has been one of those guys that's kind of stayed on the free agent market for a while. Let me say this about Eric Winston. He's a older guy now. He used to be young when he gave up a billion sacks to OC back in the day. Now he's a little bit older. I think he's 31.
You're thinking about Winston Justice.
I am thinking about Winston Justice. I'm sorry. I got those two guys confused for a second. My bad. Eric Winston, though, is about 31 years old. That I know was correct because I looked that up last week. You know, he's a veteran. He's fine. He's slowing down a little bit. If I play him at tackle, I'd rather play him at right tackle than play him at left tackle.
Sure.
You know, he doesn't get me that excited. I'm not sure how much better he is than Charlie Brown, for example. You know, I think he's probably a little bit better. I don't know how much better he is. So would I mind having him here as veteran depth at tackle? No, because I think that is one of the weaknesses, especially with Will Beattie being a question mark right now. But I don't think he's any sort of long-term answer as a starter by any means.
Okay, great. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't want to get into a long thing about this Eli thing, but what I will say, just listening, I love the Eli, the talk and the debate. It's always Eli Manning, even if it's a non-Giants fan, he's always kind of a hot-button asterisk type debate, because I think Eli makes the quarterback argument very difficult. Because if you think about it, he's really like no other quarterback in the league. He's had some really terrible regular seasons.
Yeah.
But what Eli does in the debate is you have these Super Bowl and these hot runs that he brings into the conversation, that even if you're talking about his brother, who's probably the greatest quarterback of all time, then really a fan can step up and say, well, I'd rather have Eli over Peyton because he's proven that he can win some big spots. So I think that's what Eli does to the conversation.
Yeah, you know, Marco, I agree 100%. You know what I compare Eli to? Eli is that guy. You go to the park and you watch this guy playing against you in a 3-on-3 basketball game. He looks uncoordinated. He looks like really sudden. He doesn't look smooth. Everything he does looks like he might have traveled, or he just doesn't look like a great athlete. But every time he shoots the ball, it goes in. He knows how to do a little tricky move to get the ball in the basket, and he constantly wins. Eli doesn't win pretty a lot of the times. He's not a guy you're going to watch and say, wow, that's how you play quarterback. That was beautiful. That was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. You know, occasionally you'll get one of those, and you'll get a good throw here and there, of course. I'm not saying he's always doing things ugly and, you know, he's getting lucky. That's not my point. But in the end, you look at the numbers and you say, wow, this isn't that impressive. But you go back, and whenever you needed him to do something good, he stepped up and he did something good in that spot. So that – and you're right. It makes the debate very difficult because he doesn't have those gaudy numbers that a lot of these other quarterbacks do. I agree 100%.
I would encourage anybody to go back, and you could probably Google it now. Ernie Accorsi's scouting report on him when he watched him at Ole Miss describes everything you just said. It's not always pretty. He's not always doing it the way you want him to do it. He's going to make you crazy sometimes. But in the end, if you really had to, you know, put your money down on somebody like him, you're going to do it because you have that gut feeling that he's going to come through for you. This is what I wanted to ask you, and I know you said this is the last caller, so I wanted to get your insight on GPP and what you think, barring that the injuries are really pushed aside now and he's going to have a solid year. What do you see from him this year? And I'd also like to listen off the air, what are the Giants going to be doing with the Hall of Fame this year? Are you going to be out there doing a show? I'm going to be out there with my buddies. We bought tickets to go to the ceremony, and we're looking forward to making it a great weekend, and I hope to see you out there, John.
All right, Marco. Appreciate the call, man. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Thanks, bro.
Thanks. All right, number one on JPP, and then I'll get to the Hall of Fame question. I think if JPP stays healthy, he'll have a double-digit sack year. I don't think he's going to be in that 17 to 18 area, but I think he'll get between 11 and 13. How about that? And I think he'll make the case to be a big money free agent in the offseason. And that's going to be a topic for about a year from now. And I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole yet. I'm just not. But I think if JPP can stay healthy, I think he'll have a double-digit sack year. Again, I don't think he's going to be like, you know, a first-team All-Pro. But I think he can get you 11 to 13 sacks and be a very solid pass rusher. That's the way I look at it. As for the Hall of Fame, we are going out there. I don't think we have our travel details set yet. Well, we're probably going to try to go out there a week early. We can do the show out there if we can get the gear out there and figure out a way to do it technically. I have not investigated that yet. That's on my list of things to do when I get back from the honeymoon. So we'll try to figure that out. We'll see how it goes. But, yeah, we should be doing a lot of stuff out there. Whether we're doing big BBKL out there or not, I'm not sure. But we will certainly have a lot of content, and I'd love to have the opportunity to interview some of those Hall of Famers. Though Bob Pop out there, Schmokey might get kicked to the curb. Time to bring the big guns for the Hall of Famers. It's Papa time. mean, this little peon Schmelk, get out of here. Now for the Twitter question I want to hit, because I think we had this conversation before, but I'll bring it up again. From Gina NY, every year I get new home and away jerseys. First of all, bravo, good job. But I keep picking guys that leave. Any suggestions? All right, well, here's what you got to do, Trina. There are a couple ways you can go here. You can pick a draft pick, a high pick like Beckham, because you know he's going to be here. But the problem is you don't know if he's going to be good. So I wouldn't commit to a draft pick until I actually see him get on the field and play well, okay? So I'm going to lay low on that. So offensively, if you want to get somebody you know is going to be here, you get Victor Cruz. That's your sure thing. I would consider Rashad Jennings. He's on a 3-year contract. I think he's going to be here for all 3 years of that contract. That's an option. I lay low on O-line, just because who wants an O-lineman jersey? You lay low on tight end. Besides Cruz, I think you got to lay low on wide receiver. You could always go Eli. Now, remember, the Giants haven't extended him yet, so that is also a risk, and I'm guessing you already have an Eli. On the defensive side of the ball, can't go JPP, free agent. Want somebody, you know, if you want a unique jersey that not a lot of people are going to have, but he is a guy that could be here for a while, Jonathan Hankins. He's got 3 years left on his rookie deal. I believe he has a 4-year contract as a second-round pick. I'll have to double-check that. So Hankins could be an option. You can't go Colin Jenkins. You can't go Ayers. You can't go Kiwi. Short-term deals. At linebacker, again, beast with all his injuries, I'd lay low. McClain, short contract, lay low. Nobody else. In the secondary, Prince is going to be a free agent. It's risky. Now, they control him for 2 more years, this year and next year, and I think they'll try to resign him, but Prince, risky. Roll, free agent after this year, risky. Stevie Brown, off an ACL, risky. Demps, 1-year deal, risky. Walter Thurman, 1-year deal, risky. Go Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. Sign a 5-year deal. The late years in that contract are not that cap prohibitive from what I understand from the capologists out there. So I would say Dominique Rogers-Cromartie on defense, Jonathan Hankins on defense, Cruz on offense. If you really like the draft picks, you can go Beckham on offense, but I would think about Rashad Jennings. Those would be the guys I'd look at, Trina, if you want to try to get a jersey. Everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. My final show as a single man. Married on Saturday, off to Thailand shortly thereafter, and then I'll be back the week before training camp, the week of July 14th. So, see you tomorrow morning. If you have any ideas of what you want to discuss on the show, feel free to send me a tweet at Schmelk or at hashtag Giants Chat. We'll see you then.